Hello and welcome to episode number 50 of the podcast More Than Tones, Music Education and Society. This is the second of two episodes that deal with the power of music, its potential to transform societies, and musical leadership. Since I find these aspects of music making in groups very interesting and have a big desire to understand them better, I participated in the Music Leadership Summit. It was planned, organized, and led by the Musicians Without Borders and took place in the Netherlands. Who are the Musicians Without Borders? If you go to their website, you'll find a lot of information and videos about their work across the globe. Here's some information about the history of this charitable foundation. Quote, established in May 1999 by founder and director Laura Hessler, Musicians Without Borders is the world's pioneer in using music for peace building and social change. Laura mobilized her network of socially conscious musicians to create an organization dedicated to using music to bridge divides, connect communities, and heal the wounds of war. The organization's first long-term project, the Music Bus, brought music, dance, and theater to children in Srebrenica and its neighboring towns and refugee camps. End quote. In their global grassroots programs, the Musicians Without Borders train professional musicians to become change makers in their own communities. Today, the Musicians Without Borders organize and realize projects in Kosovo, North Macedonia, Bosnia, Palestine, Jordan, Rwanda, Northern Ireland, El Salvador, and in Europe with displaced people. In this episode, you get to know Laura Hessler and Otto de Jong. Our conversations took place in the Acousticum in the Netherlands during the summit. When I was talking to Laura, the ventilation system of the building became a little louder in some moments, and I interviewed Otto just after lunch. That's why you'll hear some background noises coming from the eating area. I apologize for this and hope you enjoy listening to our conversations. When I approached you and asked you for an interview, I said I would like to talk about leadership and about musical quality. And you said, well, sure, we can talk about these things. But for me, it's important to talk about justice in your podcast. So I thought, great, let's start talking about justice and how Musicians Without Borders bring more justice into the world. What's important to you?
Well, my own background was there have always been two kind of strands of action and belief and passion, I would say, in my life. And one of them was social action on behalf of peace and social justice, understanding peace within the framework of justice. So I grew up outside of New York, and my parents both worked for a nonviolence organization that was involved with the civil rights movement at that time, and also involved in anti-war organizing, pro-peace allegiances with various parties, very active in the Vietnam War. And the second thread of my life was always music. And that came, I guess both of my parents, neither of them was actually a musician in the formal sense of the word, but they both loved music very well. I suspect that if they had grown up in a different time, they might both have become musicians. My father was a singer. He used to sing at people's weddings and things like that. My mother danced and sang harmony to everything and was a performer as a child. And so, but I grew up with these two strands, and I grew up in a cooperative community, which was racially mixed and included all kinds of people and many artists and musicians as well and activists. So it was a very, very special kind of background, but music was always part of the social movements that I was involved in or that I was learning about. And it was part of many of my parents' favorite stories about their heroes who had saved people's lives or who had been involved in struggles for social justice. So those two things were very much sort of woven together in my own development.
I was very impressed when you told us that you were actually present when Martin Luther King gave his famous I Have a Dream speech. What kind of leader was he? What were his special qualities that could help initiate change?
Well, Martin Luther King was, I think he was an exceptionally brilliant thinker. He was very, very learned about traditions and history and literature. He was, I believe, actually introduced to the whole concept of nonviolence by people within the pacifist organization that my parents worked for early on. But he was a combination of somebody with this deep understanding of, I would say, the deepest issues around social justice, injustice, the qualities of life that a society could and should aim for its citizens, and what was missing in that. And then he became a student of nonviolence. He learned about Gandhi. He attended a seminary where there was a lot of emphasis on this teaching. And it was a combination, I think, of this knowledge, the thoughtfulness, and being such a powerful orator, speaker. He was such an amazing speaker and so good with sort of planting ideas, putting ideas out in ways that were understandable for people and that made them attractive. And he was also willing to take risks for the greater good. And in fact, obviously, I mean, he was jailed many times. And finally he was assassinated, you know, but he also made the connections. And this is one of the things that I find so important also in our work. He made the connections between the issues. He talked about the triple evils, as he called them, of racism, militarism, and we would say today, unfettered capitalism. I think he called it materialism, unlimited materialism, something like that. And he made those connections, and he spoke about justice all the time, you know, and so his memory has been in many ways kind of sanitized by the media and the powers that be, and he's been turned into this nice guy. But during his life, he was very unpopular because he was bringing these issues together, and he was leading these movements, which, you know, people were saying, we're not ready for this. We're not ready for this. He says, we've been waiting for 300 years, you know. So that to me was a combination of qualities and these, you know, understanding these contradictions in life. I heard recently someone speaking about these two phrases that he often used, the one talking about the fierce urgency of now, and the other talking about the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice. So this combination of the necessity of action, the necessity of understanding the urgency of now, and at the same time, the patience to know that it's going to take a while.
We need
and
a
the
lot
faith,
of patience.
Yes, but also the faith that it will come all right. You know, and the other side of that quality of leadership is that he was leader, and once, you know, he was removed, the movement kind of fell apart, and that's the weakness of that kind of leader.
We were talking about different kinds of leadership, and you were talking about group-based leadership, you were talking about servant leadership, mm-hmm. and yeah, maybe you can explain a little bit about that. And also with musical examples, what you saw here during this week, how group-based leadership or servant leadership was practiced here in the mm-hmm. Netherlands.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so these concepts, group-based leadership, another amazing leader in that same civil rights movement was a woman named Ella Baker. And she was instrumental in founding an organization that came kind of after King's organization. It was called the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And her premise was that the leadership should come from the activists themselves as a collective and not from one person. She loved King, and she was in part of his movement and I think there was no enmity, but she believed that there should be a kind of community-based leadership where leadership was shared, because then it had legitimacy. Then everybody was invested in it. And it's also, you know, easier to sustain than having a single leader.
And yeah, I think, it will not break apart so quickly, right?
Yes, exactly, exactly. And to me, this is also very interesting. And I, you know, obviously I find someone with this amazing power of words that King had, and his ability to inspire people, both by his words and by his actions, by modeling, you know, by being the first one to get arrested, by being willing to take a risk. I mean, his home was bombed, his family was at risk, and going back out there and going back out there again. But I think it's also that we're also kind of living in a time for this group-based leadership. And that idea of the servant leadership, that's sort of connected to that, but that's talking about sort of the call to leadership. What is it based on? Is it based on wanting to be a leader? Or is it based on wanting to serve and having a vision for how that could work? And the idea that, you know, at one point in our own organizational development, I can remember thinking, I'm the only one around who doesn't want to be director. You know, I just want it to work. I want it to work. And I have an idea about how that can happen, and I have some strategies, and one of those strategies is to pull in people who have leadership qualities and give that space. So that, and yeah, the, I mean, I think that kind of vision has been something that's powered our organization all along, and that's why you saw that coming out in our training sessions and our methodology, is because that's what it's all about. It's about empowering people to be leaders in their own way. I think that it's a real struggle for people who get together to achieve something to escape the kind of corporate mentality, the mentality of hierarchies, the mentality of corporate thinking, of, you know, calling everybody a manager or a CEO or whatever it is. And this idea, because it's much more complicated to create a structure in which you're sharing leadership than it is to do something top down. But I'm persuaded that it's much more consistent with the ends that we're looking for. And it's much stronger if you can make it work.
And we were just talking about the question, what a strong leader is. And I guess that would be my definition of a strong leader, a person who can do exactly what you described, like finding strength in other people and building it up together.
Yeah.
And you need to be strong for that, because if you perceive that hierarchies come up and that certain processes start, you don't want to start because you don't want hierarchies. There has to be a person who says, oh, stop, we should have a look at what's going on here, maybe, in a team.
Right, and somehow you have to navigate also the need for some structure, the need to not have everybody involved in every single decision all the time, because that takes too much time, the need to honor people's talents as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, not everybody feels the need to lead. Many people feel the need to serve and support.
Yes.
And you can, I think you can make a good mix of that, as long as everybody's place is respected and honored, and that there's always space for growth.
Yeah, beautiful. I would like to go to another topic.
Sure.
The second topic we were talking about in your session was musical quality. Mm-hmm. And you talked about different dimensions of quality. I would like to quote you, because I wrote down one sentence in that session. It was, either it sounds good or it's inclusive. You said that this is a belief many people have, but you don't believe this.
No.
Can you maybe explain this?
You know, I mean, music in our societies has been kind of turned into a product, right? It's been commodified. And I think also, well, I know, I mean, the arts have come to be perceived as external things
yeah.
That you have to be taught by somebody else, that you are judged about according to a pretty arbitrary set of standards, and in which there are also hierarchies of who's the best and who's less best and who's sort of mediocre and who finally, you know, is an amateur, and all of those different qualifications, and within societies which have been sort of based on that kind of commodification of everything, there emerges a kind of definition of what is quality. And in recent years, we've seen the rise of a belief among many people, many musicians as well, many people who are working sort of within the more social rather than strictly performative aspects of music, that no, that's not good, and we should be including everybody, and it doesn't matter what the musical quality is. To me, that's still accepting that definition of quality.
I see.
It's rejecting it, but it's also, it's saying that's not, you know, we don't accept, we don't want that quality. And to me, one of the...
It's the other extreme, maybe.
It feels like that to me. And I think that one of the most important things about the arts is that we experience them as adding to our lives because of the beauty. Somebody said that the other day in the discussion. You know, because it moves us, because this is a kind of expression of who we are in symbols, in, you know, ways that touch. And I, to me, what is missing in maybe that kind of rejection of society's definition about what quality is.
So how does quality come into being with regard to making music in groups?
How does quality come into being? Okay, then we go back to our discussion about leadership, right?
I think so.
I think so too. And I think, though, that the weakness of the kind of standard definitions about what quality is in our societies, generally in terms of the arts, is that it defines quality along arbitrary standards, understanding the arts as something that we are taught by somebody, not primarily as the very human expression of who we are. And to me, the importance of the arts is expressing who we are. And the kind of measure of quality, I don't think there is a measure of quality actually, but the quality can be looked at in terms of the value of connection, the social values, connecting people, whether it's connecting those people making music in a group, and the artistic kind of quality, and that those are very, very intimately connected. I mean, who hasn't heard some performance or hasn't been at some performance of some musician who is very, very competent at playing loads of notes and came away feeling totally untouched?
Yeah.
And who has been at some performance where a musician's connected directly with the audience and with each other, clearly, and everybody was in tears? We all know this. And this is because, in my mind, because there's been a balance there between the artistic and the social. And social meaning connecting. Yeah? And to me, there's a, you know, and there's another aspect, I think, and I think that, but this isn't exactly the quality question, but what's missing from the standard definition of the arts is one, that innate human quality which connects us to each other, which connects us in vision, which connects us in inspiration, which connects us sometimes just through pure sound and what happens when you're singing or playing next to another person or listening to in the same space. And the other one is the reflection function. The telling the stories, the critical stories or the loving stories or whatever, you know, sort of reflecting back to us about our societies, our communities, our lives. So those two, I think, are such important pieces of what art means and should mean in any community, and largely missing in the standard definition of what quality means. So I think if you're looking about, if you know, making music in group settings where maybe you're working with vulnerable children or you're working with people in a refugee center or you're working with your community group, then that leadership is about process, it's about connection, it's about an overview, holding the overview of the music. It's also about inspiring people to achieve as high a quality, as high an artistic quality as they're able to. Why? Because that's what gives the most satisfaction. Because there's the creative process coming out. There's the challenge. There's the identity, expressing one's identity through the arts, which that's my idea about what leadership is or should be.
Thank you so much, Laura, for this conversation.
You're very welcome.
You've just heard Laura speaking about her strategy to pull people into the organization who have leadership qualities that help realizing the goals of Musicians Without Borders. One of the people she pulled in more than 20 years ago is Otto de Jong. Let's listen to this musical leader at work and find out what his leadership sounds like when he's making music with children and local musicians in a refugee camp. So, Otto, thanks for taking some time to talk about what you do. I've heard that you've been a trainer for Musicians Without Borders for a long, long time, and also that you're a children's choir leader. And so maybe we can start by talking about the groups you work with. Which groups do you work with at the moment?
Okay, well, thank you for inviting me, Daniela. And I work for Musicians Without Borders actually from the beginning, so that's now 22 years already.
Wow.
And, in the past I conducted several children's choirs. For the moment I do not, although I'm a music teacher, so in front of the class I'm singing a lot with children, and for me there's not such a difference.
Is it primary school?
Yeah, most of the times it's primary schools. So children between, that means in the Netherlands, children between 4 and 12 years old. And besides that, I'm conductor of a youth symphony orchestra in two parts. So one part is children from 8 to 12 years old, who just started playing a symphonic instrument. And then a bigger orchestra with young people from 12 till about 18 years, a little bit more or less. And so that's what I'm doing. That's actually on the field. And I'm coaching and guiding colleagues, classroom teachers, music teachers. So I give trainings, lectures, and coaching programs. That's what I'm doing. Most of it.
Many, many things.
Many things.
We talked about musical quality even a few weeks ago in one of the pre-sessions, and you talked about different ideas of musical quality. I would be interested in what's most important to you when it comes to musical quality, when you make music with children or also with adolescents. What elements are important for you? Imagine you see a youth choir or you see an orchestra. How do you see that they produce quality?
Yeah, that's a very good question and a difficult question, actually. Mm. As we all are musicians, we are taught on the conservatory what quality is. And the highest quality is that all notes are in good order, that's the right expression and the right message in the music, and that everything is good in tune and even better and even more precise. That actually is what we are taught.
Yes.
And actually, when you are in music education, that becomes a problem. I see many colleagues giving lessons and they are working from the music to the children instead of working from the children and using music. And that's for me a very important breaking point in this. Yes, the quality of the music itself is important because it helps us to get this good feeling together. It connects us if the sound is well, if everything is in tune. But on the other hand, we are teachers, we are workshop leaders, we are conductors with for children and adolescents, and as a conductor in this target group, you are also a sort of teacher. And if you manage, what is one of our goals is to work on the process of music making, to learn them to play together, to sing together, to enjoy the music they are making, instead of it is not good enough, what they hear so many times.
Yes.
And when I see that the children enjoy their music and they feel good about it and they feel the connection, that's about quality. And after
it
that,
it produces the quality, right?
Exactly. Then you produce that. The quality. And very important, well, let's approach this from my position as a conductor. A conductor, let's say my teacher told me, you have only one friend, and that's the score.
Really?
Really, I had one teacher
like the paper
and conductor
in front of you.
Yeah, and the score, because the score is the truth. And you have to approach the truth as close as possible. And I understand what he means. But it doesn't work when you are in music education. Well, actually, I don't believe that it works when you work with people at all. It can't work with that. You are interpreting the score for the people you are working with.
That's an interesting question. How do you work on interpretations with children or adolescents? You work on a piece? How do you do that, the interpretation?
Children and adolescents, they have to learn what interpretation is. Many times they don't know. They like it or they don't like it, and for the rest they have no clue. Well, some have already, some not. Let's not speak about all children and all adolescents, of course. So we have to learn them to interpret. That means if I do, for instance, a menuet from the 18th century, I start dancing in front of the orchestra. I'm not a dancer, especially not a dancer of old dances. But what a fun it can be to express with your body what is the power of the first beat, what is the power of the third beat. Just show it and let's dance all together. And let's the whole orchestra, okay, stand up, and let's make this movement all together. That's so much fun. And then you make it alive. Instead of telling that there is an arsis and a thesis, you have to put the accent on the first beat and the light beat. That's all technical. Just make it alive, and then you invite them to have a look in what happened in history and why it happened. And then it's an interesting story for them. And then they will go into it and they will do it. And I think that's it. So we are not interpreting because the score tells us that we have to do it in this way. Then we are a slave of the score.
Oh, yeah.
Then we are a slave of the music. No, music is a gift we received. And music gives us the opportunity to look in history, to look how we came to moves, to dances. We are now dancing. All young people are dancing on the square of the school. And where does it come from? How did people in previous time doing this? Why we are dancing now as we are dancing? They get pieces of the puzzle for themselves. And the music is helping them. And the music rehearsals are helping them. And the music lessons are helping them on whatever level.
So it sounds like you do these fun activities. You help the young people to make music alive or make them feel alive with the music. But it sounds like you also reflect with them after that. Do you do that too? when you work with an orchestra?
Yes.
How often do you do that, on which moments?
Well, my orchestra with adolescents, now we have about, so after, now we are in the COVID time, it's 40, 45 children. Normally it's about 70, 80, 85.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a huge group. And a group reflection, I don't do so much, because then it's always the same people who give a reaction, and the reactions must be proper, must be appropriate, I mean, that's the word. Because everybody is listening and everybody has a meaning
there's
about
high
what you
pressure.
Said. So there is a pressure.
Yeah.
What I do mostly that during the breaks, after, before, and somebody is close to me, I simply say, hey, are you happy? And with this opening, or hey, this was your first rehearsal with us, are you still alive?
Yeah.
Just this kind of things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My question is not, do you like the music? Yeah, I can also ask, do you like the music, or what do you think about our music making? No, for me is the first thing. Do you feel well? Do you
with
feel
our
safe?
Group.
Do you feel safe?
Yeah.
Do you feel well? That's because when you're honest in this, and you will, and you are able to receive honesty from the member of the orchestra, that's the opening for more discussion. That's the opening for in-depth discussions, and some are happy with saying, yeah, I'm fine, thank you.
And they don't want to reflect
enough.
Anymore.
No.
Yeah,
and that's also
I guess
fine.
What you mean. Yeah.
Everybody is in a different stage of development,
yes.
And everybody has a different character. But the beautiful thing is, some orchestra members, they don't look at me, and they think that I am a dangerous maestro who will say
yeah.
bad things. But if you have made one time such a moment, just, hey, are you happy? And I like your shoes, by the way. It doesn't matter what you said, but just to be friendly to them. And I noticed from that moment, he's always looking at me. And he's waving at me when we meet in the corridor. And that's so nice. The contact has started.
That's quality of life, actually, what you're describing right
now.
That's
quality of life.
Yeah.
And music
yeah.
is life.
Mm.
Music is a part of life, so it's in the music and it is around the music, and that's why I wanted to tell you about one teacher in conducting who said you have only one friend and that's the score. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Wow, thank you, great stories. I want to talk about one more thing. It's about order in the classroom. And I wrote down what you said about that yesterday in the session. You said, music is a tool we can use to create order in the classroom. And then you showed us how you do it. Can you explain it to the listeners, what you mean by that sentence and how you do it?
Yeah. Well, actually, turn on your camera. I can
yeah.
show you. But we have a beautiful tool, and that's music. Many times I see colleagues, for instance, when you will give everybody two sticks and we will do stick activities with sticks, to drum on the floor, to drum on your chair. So many of us is doing this. And then
yeah.
you're handing sticks to everybody and we're sitting in a circle, for instance. But the moment when a child has two sticks, what is he going to do, or she or they? Drumming!
Yes.
You can't be angry to this child. You gave two sticks and you're not allowed to drum. Come on.
Yeah.
Of course this child is drumming. So, but this teacher is handing out sticks to everybody in the circle. So there will be a moment you already are by child number 11 from the 25 in your classroom. But the number 1 and 2 and 3 already have a lot of fun. So it becomes very noisy in the classroom. Teacher become nervous. Red spots in the neck of the nurse. And... and becomes angry. No, I said, don't do this. Please, stop it. And there is more and more stress coming up, and more children start to drum, because more children have these sticks. And at the end, okay, give back the sticks. You are not able to do this activity. You are not powerful enough, not strong enough, and you're not polite enough.
You're not behaving.
You're not behaving. Well, that's actually what I mean. And
yeah.
the less is spoiled. The atmosphere is spoiled. Why not to do an activity? You're sitting still in a circle. You're singing a song. And singing a song, you hand over two sticks to the neighbor. You can sing with the whole classroom, for instance. And then you sing, for instance, Pass the sticks to your neighbor. There is another one. Pass the sticks to your neighbor. And you are giving sticks to the child on the right of you. And they are going to give this. You have to prepare this. At first, when everybody knows this song. It's not a song, by the way. I just...
You made it up on the spot.
You made something on the spot. And you do it. And tomorrow I will do it in a different way. But there are two things happening. In one hand, there is a beat and a melody. And it brings us in the same vibe. Something is happening. Also, the children who were still talking with each other. Oh, they will look at me because something is happening. He's singing. Yeah. And there are more children singing. And more they start to sing. And when they are all singing, or sort of, let's not talk about the quality of the singing, whatever. It's not a vocal lesson. But everybody's in. And so that's the first thing. The music is there to get you in the same vibe. But the second thing, I give instruction. And the instruction is, give the sticks to your neighbor. And I'm not only giving these instructions. Everybody is giving instructions to themselves and to each other. So you have nothing to explain. And the sticks are going to the neighbors. And the sticks are going around in the whole circle. And the first time it will fail, there will be one child with 10, 12, 30 sticks. Because he didn't understand what's happening.
Yeah.
And that's no problem. Because that's a part of the learning curve. And how are we here? To learn. To experience. Yes. Not to be perfect. We are learning this. So we stop the song. We will solve the problem. Shall I help you? I take some sticks from you. And then you divide them. And then you go on. And when you do this next week again, this guy understands much better what to do. And it's a lovely way, because what's happening, you're not only organizing your lessons, because your goal was that everybody will have two sticks, but there is already music in the classroom. So the music lesson already has started, because we have a beat together, we are singing together, and there is social competence because I'm giving sticks to the neighbor. So there's also a sort of social development in the classroom. Many things you manage to get in the first 2 minutes of the lesson.
Thank you so much for your beautiful stories, Otto. Thanks.
It was me, big pleasure. And good luck.
This was episode number 50 of the podcast More Than Tones. A big thank you to Laura Hessler and Otto de Jong. And thank you for listening up to this point of the episode. Before saying goodbye, I want to ask you, what kind of leader do you want to be? Do you want to be a leader who tells others how things should be done? Do you want to be a leader who's curious about other people's ideas and who wants to find out what they can contribute to the musical projects you realize together? Can you imagine being a servant leader? We are looking forward to receiving your feedback and your thoughts about the topics we talked about. If you want to share some thoughts, go to the blog www.mehralstöne.de, spelled MEHRALSTO with an umlaut, N-E, and use the space for comments you'll find under each episode. In the next episode, you'll hear Michał Zawadzki, Agata Rikas and Juan David Garzón's thoughts on leadership and participation when making music with groups. So stay tuned, and in the meantime, enjoy making and listening to music and teaching.